didn't go close custody. When he goes close to us and we admit him, and of course, we have no control over who we admit. That's something that the DTS will decide in terms of placing guidelines, and they will send them to us when they arrive, which assists us then to employ social workers. So I think that money is more well spent there. And of course, we have a system of incident management. If we look at the safe environment, first of all, we know that the environment that we put inmates in needs to be regulated. So one of the things that we use to maintain order and control and discipline is to motivate inmates to behave well. That's done through a privilege system that's called through 3 tiers, like that in correctional services. We are bound by the same 3-year system or similar system. We maintain the cells and buildings to acceptable level, which means that there is no chance for escape from those cells or those type of incidents being difficult to happen. And then we have a process in place to ensure that they comply with the rules of the facility. And in terms of the contract, we also have emergency support team that specially trained in more employees who can only use force after they have asked approval from the DTS. So if we have incidents, we have to ask permission from the controller's office in normal case of events, and then this team can stabilize the situation. I think that what is one of the biggest points that we have is that we are fully responsible for health and safety. I'll get to some awards that we have won in that case. And we are doing that for effective searching of all employees, visitors, and inmates that have come to the facilities, and nobody is overlooked in that process. We've got a mandate in drug testing when it's necessary. We use sniffer dogs and effective intelligence system, and that's why the drug control component in the prison to such an extent that one of the focus areas of the British government, they have seen people to look at what they call tightened prisons last week. The Honourable Mr. Gauteng was there, he's the High Commissioner in South Africa, as well as prison expert Mr. Alpax. One of the focus areas is how do we get it that we have basically drug free environment. In terms of conditions and the inmate needs, as I said, when they get to us, we have that assessment, we do a thorough assessment. We get what is their strong point and what needs to be attended to. We then agree a sentence plan with each inmate, like basically a correctional plan if you look at the Correctional Services Act. The inmate then sign an agreement that they will follow that plan, and that basically forms the process and how we do the programs, which in Britain they call the regimes. This is to the inmates, of course, the contact to the outside is very important. We have a 48-hour pre-booking system that is visitation runs 7 days a week, so every day they visit. The 48-hour pre-booking system assists us that we don't get to a situation where 13,000 visitors pops up and you have everybody only gets 10 minutes, but we get more time for that. And the other side, why the pre-booking system is so important, that if somebody is scheduled to be in school in the morning or writing an exam, that you don't book a visit to withdrawing from the exam to see his mother. So when the mother phones, we will say, unfortunately, you can't do the morning visit, but you can do the afternoon or the next morning. So we can offer other times to facilitate these processes. And it doesn't really mix up our specific program. And in terms of visitation, we have special organization for children who visit with the parents, because we have found that after 10 minutes spent with dad, they get restless, and then basically the visit doesn't really go into the depth that it should. So we've got a small area where we then accommodate those children. They look after specially trained child and youth care workers employed by myself. Family contact, they receive mail within 24 hours after receiving it, so when the mail comes in, they get it immediately, basically. One free letter a week, and unlimited call at the inmate's cost. Inmate's clothing is light blue, and it basically makes provision for all seasons. And the range of clothing is even specified in the contract. So if the contract says so many shirts, so many trousers, that type of stuff, we have to supply that. And then even if it poses an escape risk, there's a certain colouring that we put on the clothes so that we can distinct him and make sure that he doesn't go into areas close to the fence, or that the we beef up security around that specific region. Food service are outsourced to a subcontractor. We give three meals a day to these people within the regulation, within that time frame that we know it's a problem for bigger groups. And it's basically approved by the dietitian. Special diets in terms of medical and religious diets are given a while ago, 2 years ago. We have quickly realized that a lot of inmates being HIV positive had to get high fiber, high protein meals, which basically created quite a management problem. Because as you can understand, if I give that food 10 minutes late to the inmate, I don't get paid for that specific day. So we changed to a system where everybody in the prison now gets high fiber, high protein. So can't identify the person on a medical diet for HIV, which means that it can be victimized. Of course, at an increased cost, but that's worth it. If we look at healthcare, we have to have healthcare services available 24 hours a day. We have a chemist on site, X-ray facilities, doctor's consultation rooms, basically all the facilities that one would need for such a population. The site is also certified to issue ARVs, which we receive through the national health system. We provide basic health care in the housing block, so everybody doesn't get the opportunity to go to the doctor first hand. They have to see the nurse. If the nurse is an NC, that they can't help him, the doctor goes to the house block. If the doctor can't assist him, then he goes to the hospital area. And we have program in place to deal with mentally ill and chronic illnesses, as well as people which we call SASH, suicide and cell bombers, which we identify and we keep them under observation. In terms of a structured approach that we follow, the sentence plan that I've alluded to beforehand is paramount to see what program he has to go to, who will give that program, and where does it fit into your structured day. Structured day being basically provides two shifts. So say for instance, to explain that in the morning the inmate will go to school and then in the afternoon he will stay in the unit to visit the social worker. It means that we are basically unlocked for 12 hours from 7:30 in the morning to 7:30 in the evening, and inmates are then scheduled for these programs. It's 40 hours of programs just for the interest. The international average for those that they call public school activity is 30 hours. That's nothing to specify 40, because there you can see 40 more. In terms of the structure day, that basically runs our movement program so that we know who's going to move where and when at what time. And it basically consists out of things like work, education, vocational training, physical education, counseling, domestic activity, lifestyle options, and some quiet periods where we just everybody keep to their cell, rest after activity, and then the activity program starts once again. In terms of our total approach, it's we call it ICE, it's, inmate care and empowerment. We give opportunities for development, I will allude to that further on. And we see to it that the inmates are kept accountable for that, because that's the only way that we think that we will get them to be accountable and responsible citizens of the police. If you look at the education department, you will see that we are giving all the adult basic education levels. We start off with mother tongue if they're not adult ready. To give you an idea, we were 3 years ago, we had the literacy level of below 50%. We now have a literacy level of close to 90%. That has increased a lot. We also did grade 11 and 12, sorry. And then tertiary studies, the inmates are funding that themselves. In terms of successes, the Free State facility, our facility, has been voted the best ever learning center in the Free State. And this is not only in prisons, it's also in terms of colleges local one. So they have won the prize last year. They were also voted the best group of educators within the Free State. In terms of the national competition, they were runners-up in both of those. Our success rate or pass rate for grade 12 is 93%, which is some of the highest that we will see in the country. In terms of vocational training, we are giving a few courses, basic computer and business skills, office machine operator, K-9 candle making, garment making, home care, that's where we teach them how to deal with terminal patients, because we think that we honor these, that is what they will be paid for. And we get a lot of them being placed in hospice as well. We are looking at horticulture, upholstery, cleaning services, are we making entrepreneur, leather work, and wood work. So as you can see, a vast array of courses. These courses are accredited externalists. So if they finalize the fastest course, they don't get a GSL or professional services certificate. They get one that they like somebody will get in the community, and that will assist them in getting jobs when they go out. In the years, as you can see, more than 3,700 certificates already issued in terms of vocational courses. We do the social work services where we address not only life skills but also offending behavior, victim empathy, and restorative justice, which is also part of the psychological services where we look at remorse and guilt and victim empathy, again addressing offending behavior. And we have about four psychologists on site and intensive and supported by external activities and leisure, that's about 20 hours a week. And I've got 14 activity officers employed to cover that area, and about 1,000 activities or programs are done by these 14 people in a specific month. Library services, as you know, that's a constitutional issue, access to reading material. We've got a full-time appointed librarian that basically is in the library, and then we have trolley service that goes to each or section on a daily basis. So they are scheduled to attend that, the library as well as trolley services, and they get those opportunities twice a week. Industries, we teach them workplace ethics and workplace discipline. What we basically will do safely is you will get somebody into vocational where they will do garment making, learn garment making, and after that they will work in basically make the inmate uniform. So that's typically the path that we follow. We also have metal work and a bread production or bakery with training. Religious care, we've got one full-time chaplain, and there's 53 external religious workers of 31 denominations. Church are running on 6 days a week. And that big services, the small group discussion, prayer meetings, personal interviews, religious teaching. I also do the restorative justice in that specific area. And to give you an idea, we are doing about 169 services or meetings a month, with more than 4,600 inmates paying that service. In general, and that's what I thought that you may be interested in, there's links between us and the department, which is not only on a contractual level. The department, we have to give them a strategic plan every 5 years, and that will have to basically complement their strategic plan or white paper. So that's something that we need to do. There's a controller on site, which works for the correctional services. They have unlisted access in any area, and they're basically there to look to see whether we are complying. And all our staff, after being fully trained, have to be approved by the commissioner as correctional officers and have to receive 40 hours of training per year. Community involvement, although not specified heavily in the contract, we realized in our approach that you cannot have a prison within the community and expect that community to take the inmate back after release if they don't see a benefit that inmate bring while they are with us. So we have vegetable gardens where we train them in how to do gardening, and that has delivered more than 70 tons of produce in these 6 years that we are operational. And that was donated to Kuzu Kitchen's age houses within town. We also started 3 years ago with refurbishing school desks. As you know, school desks always have holes in the top wooden box. We go to a school, we get those over breaks or holidays, we go take that to the prison, we basically revamp it, most probably just turn it upside down, the wooden part at the top, just sand it down and respray, and then it goes back this project was so successful and it grabbed the imagination of the black schools in our area that the Free State then, when they basically the desk gets to a stage where it's only pipes, they will then send those pipes to us and then we will put wooden tops on it. This, which was initially have been the idea to make it an outreach project, became a bigger project, and I got Old Mutual involved, which is now funding this project so that we can do more. So quite a well established, and we are already in the Bantu and Portugal, we're doing some of those schools at this point in time. In terms of Bartomeu School, that was the school for the Deaf and the Blind. The first project there was to do a school lesson, but then we realized the need in terms of stories for those people that cannot read, that's blind, to listen to, and we then basically got the inmate to read stories on CD for them and newspaper articles and that type of stuff. We do warmer projects in our area. We donate second-hand clothing to the needy since 2006, and a lot of the clothes that we are making in our vocational training area, smaller sizes, so that can go to orphanages. More on community involvement as we move along. Life Solutions Program, this is where one of our employees is basically working in the community for skills development for children who are in conflict with the law. We, in terms of 16 days of activism, we started to do redo the victims units in the local police police station. That word spread, and we now have 5 police stations waiting for us to finish their victims support group, which is now becoming a full-fledged project as well. And then we have regular endeavors with the community to tell them what we are doing and to see where we can assist. 2006, the Premier Award started in the Free State, and we received the Silver Certificate. Last year we won the Gold Award for a private company that has done the most for community building within the Free State region, in the sector, state sector, state agency, private spaces. In terms of health and safety, I said I would allude to that again. It's quite important for us that inmates that with us know that they are safe and that visitors know that the inmates that they stand and they will be safe. So we have looked at NOSA, which is the 4 or 5-star award for safety that you usually get in building projects. We are the first prison in South Africa, or national center in South Africa, that has gone for the building and we won 4 platinum stars, which were awarded to us 3 weeks ago. As you also know, we have to maintain that building for the 25 years because we are going to hand that building back. So government wants to know whether we are maintaining it to the level. There's annual audits by external independent people, and that report goes to government, but we also won the South African Facility Management Association Prize for the best facility management project in 2005. Our audit in that area shows that our rating is about 90%, with the benchmark for hotels is 85. So it gives you an idea of how well we maintain the building that we are going to give back to government. So I don't think that they have much to fear in terms of that. Our extra poor catering is also checked on a monthly basis to see that it's up, that the hygiene levels are up. And although the benchmark is 85%, we are getting 90% per month since 2006. The remarks received from external visitors, Martin Neri, the former British Commissioner of Correctional Services, he came here and he thought that a big prison is not something that you can run on a decent level. And after that, he visited, he wrote back and he said, I found that absolutely fascinating. And I'm left entirely convinced about the feasibility of running a similar size project in the UK. I have seen very few prisons anywhere in the world that I would be considered to be better than yours. As I said, that was followed up now by Mr. Bauten, who was a former Minister of Prisons in the UK, because they're looking at a similar model now for the UK. The inspecting judge, or the previous inspecting judge, Judge Erasmus, said if you want to achieve the goal of restoring dignity in order to protect dignity, you are making an enormous contribution. Thank you and good luck. Mrs. Berry from the presidency was there. She said, excellent institution with use of technology and human development as a concept for every day. This is a benchmark for other prison centers to emulate as a best practice for correctional services in South Africa. This is when we looked at Google from the Butona Group, previous CEO of First National, I think, said a very professional human-centered correctional facility. We are very impressed. Congratulations. And then the Honorable Mr. Balfour said you have proven that the rehabilitation of offenders is not a dream. And if done consistently with clear outcomes, it can be achieved in this regard. I want to acknowledge the work done by the management and personnel of Hong Kong. And many said to the inmates, they said today that according to the management of Hong Kong and staff are going well beyond expectations, and the inmates are the main beneficiaries of this approach. Challenges, fortunately we have a good relationship with the department, so if there's a challenge, we've got an open door policy to Mr. Joe Marcus, so we can really attend to that quite quickly and respond to it. The first one was there were some changes to the parole policy that inmates had to be seen earlier than they used to. That created some problems because of the policy change, but that was addressed and both parties are now satisfied. The IRB policy also was a problem because when we tendered on this specific prison, government didn't have the same IRB policy that it has now, so that was a change after the contract was signed, but again, that was addressed, we are now receiving that medicine through the health sector. Drug-resistant TB, you know, XDR and those type of things, which was a huge problem in South Africa a while ago, I think it still is. Instead of going to government and say what's happening now, we basically installed those lights that basically kill the germs in milliseconds. And I know that government is currently also looking at that, so that was addressed. And then the gang phenomenon, as you know, everyone knows, gangs are quite present in correctional services. We have a gang strategy. I'm not going to go into the detail about that, Chair, because I've already briefed the committee last year fully on our gang strategy and our success. The challenges, of course, continues. We have created good working relationship with our colleagues in correctional services. And one of the cornerstones of this partnership was to basically have a knowledge transfer. Now, the research has shown by Professor Tashcroft that 53 of the 84 best practices that were identified in corrections were identified in the two centers, the correction private centers in South Africa. And we have quarterly meetings now with the department where we deal with some of these elements and basically share that knowledge. So, initially a challenge, but that was put to good use. We also have the same problems as everybody in South Africa is facing in terms of Eskom. Of course, they are generated to carry the burden if there is no electricity. But as you can think, when we priced this contract, nobody expected the price increase of over 50%. And clearly, that's what they tried to get us to believe that it will be 50%. So, of course, the increase in CPI doesn't keep track of these that way above CPI. So, that brings challenges to us. And of course, having trained all the staff now to become very, very efficient, we find that a lot of government agencies are currently stealing our employees away from us, offering them good jobs. But that just gives us the opportunity again to recruit and train other people, because we believe that if our staff have to leave, do leave to make government employees take the things fine. So just to summarize the health and safety prime in the correctional facility. We have 1 4-star award for this prison. Maintenance, very important for government that we maintain this building that will at the end of the contract belong to them. Numerous awards, including the South African Facility Management Association. Community outreach, which is not really a big contractual issue, but very important. We have 1 gold within the Free State area. Education, again, runs up on a national level. Operations, we have won the Excellence Award within the GSL Group as the best operation. So that's my slideshow.
Thank you very much, sir. It's a very impressive presentation. But as we know, politicians will always have questions to ask. and it's our duty to ask this because the budget from that runs GSF comes from us, and it's only fair to ask some questions. But as I've said, we are going to have the briefing from Kukama, and then after that, then we will ask questions. But thank you very much for this conclusion. Thanks. Over to you, Kukama.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will flip with the presentation. I will present some of the issues that Indra and Jovina will assist you. As you can see, Kutama Sintimula Correctional Center is the name of our facility. The contractor, which is the contract with government, is called South African Custodial Services. As you can see the other slide, the contractual arrangement is quite complicated, but therefore I've got the board members with me, and Indran will explain the contractual arrangement. Just before we get there, for the members of the committee who did not visit Kutama, there's a picture of the prison. We will explain a little bit later. It's basically the same concept, it's different units. For unit management, direct supervision, just for interesting sake, the two contracts got also perimeter vehicles right around the fence. There's a vehicle driving there 24 hours out of 24 hours, but we will explain a little bit later on the facility. So then over to Indran on the structure of the contractual arrangement.
Thank you, Peter. So that's the social services, entity that put forward won the right to operate the Kutama Correctional Center. The South African Custodial Services is a joint venture between Kutama Corrections, which is a black-owned South African company, and Geo Group, which is an American-based organization that specializes in outsourcing government accommodation projects. Entity South African Custodial Services put forward one the rights to design, finance, and operate this facility in 1999. There was a 2.5-year negotiation period with the contract culminating in August of 2000, and construction began thereafter. The prison opened in February of 2002. For South African Custodial Services, it outsourced the operation of this contract to the entity. And as you see them on the board there, they are Kutama Corrections Management, South African Custodial Management, and Royal Food Services. Just to briefly inform the committee, the three subcontractors perform various duties, those being Kutama Corrections Management handles the facilities maintenance and training programs that are offered to prisoners in the facility. We also handle the warehouse management of procurement within the facility itself. The various subcontractors have their own procurement policies and have their own procurement offices. However, we control, that particular company controls the warehouse and the management of the warehouse within the facility. Southern Custodial Management are tasked with overseeing the security and operational aspects of the facility. They also handle the healthcare and business administration, together with the information technology requirements of the facility. All extremely important tasks that require that subcontractor. And Royal Food Services will actually provide the catering requirements of the contract. To give us an overview of the day-to-day operation, I will hand over to my colleague Lina to carry on.
Thank you, Ethan. I just want to begin to what Mr. Tino said. Even though we are two companies that render services in the prison, when it comes to the inmate development and the rehabilitation process, it's an integrated approach that we follow between the specialized teachers, social workers, and the security staff. The central to all those rehabilitation programs is our offender. On the left hand of the slide, you will see what the contract describes for us to do in terms of program hours. Every offender needs to comply with 30 program hours per week, which is broken down into 4 hours education per week, recreation 1 hour per day, which is extremely important in terms of dealing with the stress levels. Social skills 1 hour per week, which then brings up, and they have to work 4 hours per day. Our work is allocated according to their qualifications and their civility groups. The operational challenge, however, is to deliver these programs 52 weeks of the year for every single offender and simultaneously maintaining a safe and secure environment. And as we call for a family of 3,024 prisoners. On the right hand side, you can see more or less this is an example of a timetable that an offender will be having with them. It tries to simulate as far as possible a normal family life. You wake up in the morning, you go to bed, you wash, you shower. You then move to activities, you either go to school or case management, you see the social worker, the psychologist, you exercise, or you go for whatever field training you need to go to. Lunchtime, they return to the unit, there's a muscle check, they have lunch. Then at 1 o'clock, there's a lockup, a security check, and then a shift change. 2 o'clock, they will be unlocked, and then they will move back to the various activities, whether they go to outdoor soccer or education or whatever the program is. Round about 4:30, it's the evening meal cleanup, and then in the evening, the association and activity. When an offender arrives at the facility, he starts at the admission block, and this is where the rehabilitation process stops. The minute he arrives at the facility, he will be taken for the normal administration processes, the warrant check, a risk assessment will be done, medical staff will screen our offenders, and he will go through a compulsory drug test. He then moves to the induction block where he remains until his whole non-disciplinary assessment is being done. While he's in induction, he will be shown a video of the prison facility so that he can be, before he moves to the living unit, be accustomed and feel more comfortable in terms of his new environment. The multidisciplinary team then consists of the social worker, the chaplain, the teacher, the vocational staff, and the case manager. In our facility, all our case managers have got either BA criminology or honors in criminology. Every discipline will have a thorough interview with every offender so that we can determine what his needs are, where his behavior started, where it all went wrong in his life. After he's been interviewed, the case plan will be drawn and he will be central to this case plan. He'll be interviewed and he will sign off on his sentence plan. This will be the start of his whole rehabilitation pathway as described in the white paper throughout the sentence period. This case plan is reviewed every 180 days by the multidisciplinary team to make sure that he's not complying, if he's not attending, why, what is his problem, or the family problem. So every 6 months, 180 days, a thorough assessment is done to find out what his development is and how he's progressing through the system. The programs are available. Even the work program is aimed at behavior modification. So if you've done well and you've performed well, you will be employed in the kitchen, or you've completed the catering course, you can go to the kitchen. If you have completed a certain degree, you will be employed as a tutor within the system, so work is allocated according to their personal needs. Education starts from special education right through to tertiary education. We have got graduates, we've got certain city universities at the moment, that you would about to study or whatever certificate they need. Vocational training is the hard skills we call them: horticulture, building, woodwork, motor mechanics, metalwork, and we've now recently added electrical work. We've got apprentices involved right up to N6 level at the moment. Psychologists have various programs depending on his behavior. If he's being involved in an incident, he will be slotted into an anti-bullying program or anger management or whatever the case may be. Social workers are available to them. In every unit, there is a case manager which will then become his guide in his prison life, his whole pathway through the prison. And what is important in induction also, we are busy developing a DVD on prison life performed by prisoners that are involved in the drama group, so that they will come and play out this drama so that they see exactly what is waiting for them. We also have an anti-gangsterism program run by some of the inmates. And they will, while the prisoners are in the induction unit, they will come and explain to them the dangers and how easy it is to get involved in gangsterism and what the alternatives to gangsterism is. Once they've gone through the induction, they've signed off, they've physically signed the sentence plan to say, well, I'm now committing myself to this plan. They will be taken to this housing unit where they will be received by their unit manager and their case manager, which is allocated to them. And that is more or less the start and also the motivation of them to attend the program. Thank
you. At the South Continuous Directional Center, we have offenders that apply to attend a minimum of 85% program or achieve an 85% program attendance. On average, we've achieved 91% attendance rate, and we've started to take advantage and motivation strategies that allow us to go to school and help us achieve those high percentages. Our educational hours are 776,770 hours per annum. And these are effectively made up of various categories of offenders that can be different types of classes. We have AFM 1 to 4 made up of 1,080 offenders. Of these offenders, they've also been AFM 4. 778 offenders are grade 10, 500 offenders are grade 12. We've got vocational training comprising textiles, woodwork, motor, metalwork, and as my colleagues alluded to, an electrical workshop is now being set up as well. Basic occupational skills comprise beadwork, candle making, catering, and hospitality, health and safety, and trade class. We have a distance learning support program which, at this point in time, supports 236 offenders at various degrees with the various distance learning colleges. We have 6 learners who complete their entry qualifications. And computer skills are encouraged in our facility to allow offenders to come to use computer literacy that's now becoming a basic requirement. Our recreation hours total 831,396 hours per annum. These are made up of sports, games, and library time. Social skills are made up of psychological and social work intervention. Our work hours total 5,126,837 hours per annum. And the work opportunities comprise of catering, tutors, maintenance, groundwork, and work in the workshop. We serve 28 denominations in our business facility, and religious education, counseling, and social justice we provide in the facility. At the time, we always strive to maintain a safe and secure facility, and our security operation is intensive use of technology. All offenders are evaluated and assessed on entry. All tests are verified within 24 hours. We conduct daily searches to ensure that circumstances at our facility. Mandatory drug tests are conducted in the facility, as well as random drug tests. Access control for staff is controlled through fingerprint verification. And we conduct the master check 3 times a day to ensure that we've got all our offenders in the facility. We've got a security envelope that's made up of the cell, surrounded by the block, which is surrounded by the perimeter. And our security system is made up of electronic surveillance, master counts, searches, and exits, which are carefully monitored and controlled. Our
In terms of food services, as you know, food is always a sensitive issue in the institution. We serve about 9,500 meals a day. We had up to 130 offenders working in the kitchen with four different shifts. We do have a dietitian who kind of interviews the retirement case, we do quarterly. Just on an interesting topic on quality control, as you know that our food services are outsourced. We are an ISO organization, but they are on top of that exposed to international standards, which cover the quality of food, procurement, and cost management. In terms of quality, you will see pest control, hygiene, production, on storage. The contract will dictate, for instance, that we keep 5 days food samples, but if you keep 5 days, it doesn't make sense why we need to keep 7 days. So, in terms of procurement, Kutala is a little bit deprived in terms of the big cities. We are on a small little town, but we support the local community. We bought our food there. There is some quality challenges. As you see, there's a BEE, currently broad, black-based economic empowerment issues, which is difficult in a small town. The agreement is signed off by all the subcontractors, so if there is something wrong, SACM will do the food without consideration, which means without getting extra money. As it was mentioned before, if we don't provide food on time, we don't get money for the whole day, not only for that meal, the whole day we get money. That's a big issue that needs to be managed carefully. On the pricing side, you will see the CPI and CPI Act issue. The food prices is jumping up and down all the time, and it needs to be managed to be effective. The facility where you serve that number of meals. On the health side, we've got a 50-bed in-house hospital. We've got all our facilities there, not to try to be smart. That's not the issue. We don't want our prisoners to leave the facility unnecessarily. We've got x-ray machines. We've got dentist equipment. We don't want the people to go out if not need be. So there's reasons for that. 28 to 30% of our offenders are permanently on prescribed medicine. We've got about 35,000 encounters, nursing encounters, where we have professional and senior nurses in the facility. Our medical office has got on average 760 encounters per month. That means the doctor physically is handling a patient. On average, we are blessed. We only have an average 12 patients in the hospital. We've got two medical doctors and one dentist full-time on site. We've got 24 nurses, all being remunerated at the primary health care rate. We've got voluntary counseling and testing for all prisoners. We do have an HIV program. We've got way over 200 ARV prisoners which we treated. We also do have multi-drug resistant prisoners. And as our colleagues indicate, the specialized hospitals in the nine provinces are basically full now. So that means we can't send the prisoners. We need to take care of them, and we do that with the assistance of the Medical Research Council. We put the equipment in, and the staff are more happy, and the prisoners are being taken care of. On the facility maintenance side, maintenance and also preventative maintenance is very important. Our building transfer back to the government, so it's very important that we take care of that building. Just for interesting sake, on the first line you will see there are 10,400 pre-planned inspections and activities instead of sitting back and wait for reactive maintenance. It's way more meaningful to do pre-planned maintenance why you need to sit and wait till the stuff is broken. I don't think that's being listed as one of the best practices, but I think it's a point that needs to be listed for government as a whole, as we all are, because the African citizens, and it's important that government needs to see the results of an issue like this. We've got an integrated security system, and we've got all sorts of specialized areas in that prison. Therefore, you use a computerized maintenance management system. We can't even show you the plan, but you can track what you do, so that you can see where the manpower is going to, what material is being used. We've got a very good picture of what's going on. The key focus is our security. I mean, we've got maximum prisoners there. There's a lot of tools, maintenance in industry, so we need to focus on security while doing this. Infrastructure, normally if you see a big building, if you can remember, there are 6 hectares on the roof. It's a huge area that needs to be maintained. There is 1,000 toilets there. There are more than 4,000 lights. There's 1,400. That pneumatic sliding door just for the house, it's a funny word. It's a movable door, it's a sliding door, which is controlled by a very weak air film. But then the computers change that and make it a strong move, so it's a nice sliding door. We've got 2 huge standby generators, 9 mini substations, there's 9 million brick works that we need to take care of, etc. On the right-hand side, you will see the pipes in the facilities. There are 8.3 kilometers of pipe that needs to be taken care of. Now, just on the topic back to preventative maintenance, if you check the pipes for leaks, you will prevent a shortage of water, for instance, and you can then pick up and have a smoothing running facility. I think on that side, it gives you a global view of what needs to be maintained. In terms of the contract history, the construction period of this PPP was exactly 316 working days, and it was done in 316 working days. The contract period, as was stated before, is 25 years. We are currently in year 7. Just for the health, we are exposed to a different audits and inspections. It's not only the detailed inspectorate who's inspecting our place. It's a committee called the supervisory committee who do visits twice a year. And after every year, they bring out the report. So the chairperson of the supervisory committee must advise the commissioner and the minister on how is the departmental side doing and how is the contractor side doing. In terms of the operating 3 subcontractors, SHGM, the security guys, were 460 employees, Kensan is 70, Royal Food Safety, we currently do have 550 employees working on site. Achievements on a construction phase, on time is a big issue for government and for us, and on budget, because we provide a fixed price for the asset, for the building. There is no overrun risk for government. All the risk is being taken by the contractor. During the construction period, we've got key safety awards, which is also the NWSA 5-star award, which is included. We just meet all the economic endowment requirements, which is a huge exposure to the contractor. The independent engineer, government don't trust the contractor alone to issue an independent engineer. They've got a separate special risk company to sign off on the buildings before they sign off. That was issued on time. And I think the most important issue is there was zero, not a single cost variation to government for this project. In terms of the operational phase, we are in year 7. We were also exposed to ARV issues, dietrician issues. all sorts of new dilemmas or challenges come to the front, but so far we didn't ask government any price increase or more money for additional service. That was even after the decision that we must also bury the prisoners who have passed away on our positive confidence. The start-up, the full capacity after the prison was finished was reached in 220 days, which is a huge achievement. There are much smaller prisons which take a long time to fill up. It's not an easy task to fill up a new facility. We are proud, we are an ISO 9001 certification from the South African Bureau of Standards. Just for the health, you are not aware of this. The South African Bureau of Standards is quite heavy on the inspections. They issue that certificate, but you are subjected to 6 monthly inspections, and they issue it only for a period of 3 years. So every 6 months they come and do inspections without basically telling you what they are looking for. And I must say that we are proud. Currently we receive a report, and it was listed there, zero non-conformances. So that was good. We are an accredited training provider within the legislation. We are the largest adult education center in the province. As you are aware, especially in the Limpopo province, we are hit with water shortages or interruptions and electricity interruptions. So we were forced to put in a sophisticated water system. One prisoner that writes to the Human Rights one day that we cut off the water to fighting, and they take the letter there. We happily meet the Human Rights Commission the very next day. They were very impressed to see a water booster system in so a big facility, and they indicated to the prison director that they would take it up and report it to the minister's office in the province, so that they can think of doing that in all the government buildings. So that was a good one. On the electricity side, we've got standby generators, but there's some problems with that. But we've got that system in place. We are very proud of our vehicle monitoring system and our driver system. We've got a system in all our vehicles which we can trace the vehicle and the speed, and if there's arc braking, we can see exactly where it was and who did do that. And it's a very simple report to read. It's a very useful system for the broader system also. We're also proud that we are accredited for administration of antiretroviral drugs. Just on that topic, after the introduction of ARV treatments in our facility, there was about a 66% reduction in getting custody. On that specific topic, on the next slide, you will see the drop there. It's quite a visible drop. 2003, 4, 5, it was 29, 27, 29, and all of a sudden we stand for 2 years now on an average 11, which is a good. In terms of the operational phase achievements, that slide is very cryptic or short, but we've got security compliance, healthcare compliance, in food services compliance, programs, maintenance, and staff level. Just for the health, the contractor is obliged to keep the staff at certain level. We can't just cut the staff off. We must keep a certain amount of staff, and it's quite a challenge to keep that staff level up, especially in South Africa where there's a lot of skilled people leading the workforce. On top of all this requirement, the economic empowerment requirements, the penalties for that goes up to millions of rands. Escape is about, say, 400,000, but empowerment penalty can go up to 5 million plus rand. So it's very heavy penalty on that. We are proud. We just achieved all the requirements on all this area. And Indra will explain a little bit more on the environment.
Thank you, Bill.
as my colleague alluded to, there are various obligations placed on using certain houses in the farmers' contractual obligations. These obligations rest on basically three pillars, those being procurement, training, and the ownership of the contract itself. Just touching on procurement, our contract has managed to surpass the minimum obligations required in terms of procurement from black economic empowerment companies, both at the local and provincial level, by a substantial amount of figures on the board justify this, and we expect to continue on this trend for the foreseeable future. In terms of our employment, all our staff are South Africans, for permanent and permanent residents. We recruit at least 90% of our staff from the 90-kilometer radius of the facility, and we ensure that 90% of our staff are also black South Africans. Insofar as training is concerned, our first year, 160 hours, pre-service training was provided, and in subsequent years, we average at least 25,000 hours, training hours per annum. Bursaries are granted to employees for tertiary education, and we encourage staff to further their skills development with the company looking to fund their educational activities. In terms of international skills transfer, we have four full-time international advisors that visit the facility over a period of 6 months, 10 temporary international advisors that are plus minus 1 month conducting various reviews and audits. One full-time advisor to presently advising on site, and three international audits for reviews are conducted triannually, basically cover financial aspects, security, health, programs, and information technology aspects of the facility. As we've alluded to in the beginning of this presentation, the ownership of the entity is a joint venture, so in terms of our community outreach program, the facility runs 10 family days per annum, where we have up to 14,000 participants engaged in these family days. We have organized community involvement for outreach interventions in 2007. And in terms of relations made to the local community, we have very attractive relationships with the local community. And have very close bonds and ties with the various facilities and stakeholders in the local community. We design the most conducive to private schools, vegetables and field produce to old age home schools and various specials and orphanages. We host an annual charity golf day, which is donated over 150,000 rand to various institutions. Toys and gift cards that are produced by prisoners are donated to hospital patients, and there are also bursaries that are granted to scholars in the local community. We've also donated kitchen equipment, ovens and stoves to local organizations that require it. We've donated mattresses and beds to a local private school, and we always encourage the local community to visit the facility, and we donate at least 25% of our books contained in our library to the local community library.
As the last slide, our challenges, everything is not going smooth all the time. We do have some challenges that we need to face. One of our day-to-day challenges is to keep our good record clean. I always find it difficult to explain. It's like a sports person playing for a local team versus somebody in the higher league. We need to exercise to keep up with your track record. We are quite exposed. The CPI is all the way there, and CPI Act is there. The issue is not the reality. The issue is there is a big gap between the predictions and what actually happens. Even government of certain targets, which we all struggle to achieve. And then on top of that, all of a sudden the real life changes. Different than what we predict on. And unfortunately, we can't just knock on the cabinet door and say, can we increase the budget? We can't. The committee was briefed on the occupational specific dispensation for prison holders. The outcome for that is very important for us. We are exposed because I agree that I will do the same percentage as the government, but I don't know what they are going to do. The union and industrial issues are always there. We need to manage that carefully. The sustainability of utilities, water and electricity, is a big issue for a prisoner. If you are locked down and there is no water, it's a big issue. Electricity is not only Eskom. The local people steal the cables, then the municipality can't pump water, and we also can't do that. It's a big issue to get utilities, reliable utilities in the hospital. The management of building drug resistance and extremely drug resistant seedings are there. We can't predict, but all the indicators are there that there will be more, not only in our prison, in the whole prison community. We need to manage it quickly. I must say, I just read the briefings, and there was enough briefings and research available to quickly go over to Exeter, and even our colleagues in Bloemfontein to guide us and assist us. And that's a good sign of even partnership between us. The issue is we've got prisoners in our prison, and they need to be managed professionally. And we did make this information available to the department. I just haven't got feedback if anything should happen. The HIV/AIDS is growing, and our challenge is to manage that population and to treat them in a professional way. But in a nutshell, that's our day-to-day challenges. And just to conclude, I was very glad to make use of the opportunity to thank the chairperson for the invitation to the portfolio committee. The contact details is in here. I'm the contractor's representative, and Mr. Marku is the departmental representative in terms of the contract. If there's a need for the committee to know more, the committee are more than welcome to give us a call or take us a letter, or our departmental representative is Mr. Marku. He's supposed to inform the minister and the commissioner whoever got a need on the contract. So for the house, our contact details are there. And thank you once again for the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Now let me thank Mr. Jordan for this briefing on behalf of the Kama Sintumule Correctional Center. Mr. Fenter Mangau, thank you very much. Very good presentation, both of them. Are very good, but I would like to give Mr. Marco also a chance to say what you and Mr. Fenter, maybe if you forgot something, you can add before we are going to ask some questions. But Mr. Marco,
thank you, Honorable Chair. From my side, I can confirm that the two presentations reflect exactly what is happening at the two prisons. I can also confirm that the directed contract management through the controllers on site, they're closely monitoring the contract to make sure that all the specifications in terms of the contract are met. And where it is necessary, penalties are issued. But like they said, you realize, Mr. Chair, that money is very much important to the two contractors. And they'll do everything possible to make sure that you are not successful in penalizing them. But you are issuing breaches on those matters that you feel you are not complying. We also have the supervisor committee, as they said, which also serves as an additional eye on the performance of the contract. So we have quite a lot of people. We have recently had an inspection report. We also have the auditors. They were busy auditing now. They've also completed the work. So in a nutshell, I can say that the performance of the two clinics are closely monitored.
No, thank you very much. Center?
I don't have much to add here. I think what you will find is that both of these contracts were laid at the same time. So the specifications in the old contract and what Peter has presented to you are basically the same. So I think instead of trying to duplicate what the other one has said, I think the common cause of the two contracts are materially the same. So just to keep a remark on something that Mr. Marco has said, and perhaps you should just explain that. If the controller walks through the prison and sees that they leave you, they haven't done something that we had to do contraction, he then issues a note, as Mr. Marco has said. We respond to that somewhere in government. Mr. Marco made the decision that it has to be sent to the supervisory committee. The supervisory committee is then checked currently by somebody else in the department, but there is also an independent expert with legal background on that. And then both parties basically get the opportunity to present their controller on why he thinks that it's a breach and contact for why he doesn't think it's a breach. And then the decision is made, I think that decision is made as a panel of the colleagues. So that's the process, that's the committee understanding where the supervisory committee sits. Not an oversight of, like the portfolio committee, they have an oversight of. They are, they get reports and then they think their main task is to respond to complaints with regards to possible penalty, and then once a year they have to do the annual report.
Thank you very much. Members, as the two briefing documents, let's have questions. Chikunga, Mr. Maote, Mr. Shoktolo, Mr. Self, and Mr. Nkosi Tol. Cindy Chikunga.
Presentation not on the very last aspect in the first one to notice how many things have day to day been found to make you can make the corruption requirements and have been made to assess the matter to impose some penalties and I want to know from the very first presentation, I think it's not a way. The presenter says the inmates had made a limited number of calls that inmates call. I'm interested to know as to why it is and what the situation. Can I start a decision that the inmates keep around themselves and that they can go the same time?
You are saying nurses and towns have their
extension of hospital is happening. And we have 24 nurses.
They are not Roman Catholic. Good question, indeed. Dr. Mahote?
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I'm home. I just want to know if I cannot hear any mention of the parole board, but of active parole board. And secondly, they on both. There was different numbers. I'm not sure whether it's the inmates that are there or the capacity of each center. The other one is for 298. And the Dama is for 302 for whatever can be added. In the Dama, they mentioned about employed offenders. What does that mean? Are they employed just like any other person that is employed to work and affected in the balance? They also mentioned 555 employees. Is that enough? Are they managing with that number? In the first one, there was a mention of more than 5,000 safety standards. What about that? The reduction in death in Kabul, there was a percentage on the premium. How did people die? Who killed them? Also, there's a donation of 150,000 rand
where does it come from? Do you get any funding from anywhere? Or is it the money that the government is taking? The first one had a policy against strategy, although it was not specified, but it was clearly the analytics at all time. Are there any changes or things to say? Because I'm asking this question because in it plan everything. So are you hoping with the alliance to gain activity? And what about that?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mawate. Bishop Tolo.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. Mr. Jefferson, you know, I'm going to just raise one question.
It's Kutama, it's for Kutama. Yes. Can you raise your voice, Bishop?
I'm going to just ask one question, Chairperson, and just another question that comes. The contract period in budget. You know, each center, 300 million per annum, which means two of them is 600 million per annum. Now, Chairperson, you know, why I ask this question? If you according to me, we are 10 years in the but another 5 years for the government information to me. That would be 10 years from this government. And if you look, let me that it is. Now, if you look now, the ban is going down across the country. It's going down. Now, and if you look at the black people, we are poor. In the trade, what was in all of us. Now, my problem is that these are two prisons. We are, because they get jobs to support the government. Can they try to make to give us the discount? I don't know what they can say. Because I'm telling you, this is very difficult and it's a poor country. And now I say the rand goes down, the euros go up, euro and £817, dollar 770, so on and so on. But the rand goes down. Now, why I ask this question? I'm a small businessman. When I get business funds, I'm trying also to try to make a normal price. He must take a normal price of sheep. And then for the long term, for 25 years, if the price is too high, then they're going to make us poor. For example, this day we are talking about another 6 cents. Some of us, we are not agreeing, we are not supporting. But if this 600 million annum times, let's say, 7 plus 2 times 9, going to lot of the money. But now my question is that can you in your meeting come together with the list keep the government half because they're going to also provide us with another project whatever. And then I think if we are not with that, Jefferson. We are going to see in South Africa some more food, all the money we are going to get. That is the. This is my request as a Chairman.
Thank you very much, Bishop Tolo. Mr. Sells?
Yes, thank you, Chair. My question follows on from the Bishop. And it really is the sort of criticism that is levelled against PPP prisons the whole time. That really goes down to two issues. One, of course, is affordability. The question that I would like to ask is that, you know, these two contracts are governed by a particular set of circumstances, a particular occupancy rate, a particular regime. Now, would it be possible to lower, well, firstly, what is the unit cost per inmate, if it's possible to provide that information? And then secondly, would it be possible to lower the unit cost per inmate if, for example, there was a higher rate of occupancy? In other words, that the facility accommodated more people than the contract provides. The second question is really, and I think we've raised this before in previous briefings, whether in fact the best use is being made of these facilities, because you get given by the DCS, and the DCS sends you typically maximum security, long-term, very violent offenders who really aren't perhaps the best recipients of the sort of therapeutic treatment that is given at both these facilities. Now, the question I'd like to ask is whether you are in discussion with the department about changing your client base in order to make better use of these very sophisticated services in a way that could perhaps mean that the clients got better use out of these services.
Thanks, Mr. Self. Was it all?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. One of the officials here said they are holding endeavors with the members of the community. And he said this without mentioning any services of the chairperson of the parole committee. I want to find out as to how is this possible. Two, both presenters never mentioned anything about cancerism, and yet cancerism is so rife in our centers all over. What's your secret? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Taylor.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. My wife passed on the issue of 2009 is a very good place to find access tomorrow. But if you go to the numbers here, you talk of attending 4,642 inmates. I'm not sure whether you call that before what health in China, if you can explain that. Then also see the class of the issue of your workforce.
Okay.
Your workforce. Surely you would like to know where do you really recruit, where do you get the workforce? And you talk of intelligence and risk management. Are they trained to do that as well? Then,
I think it's your time,
yeah, on the issue of the donation relative to the need, I'd like to understand how often do you donate those vegetables? And who is this community that we are talking about? And also, who determines that this one is really needed?
Thank you.
So let me stop at the moment.
Thanks. Ma'am Gwena?
Thank you.
Before you respond, Ms. Chikunga asked a question, and you must give us Mangau a list or a graph of your management there at Mangau. Who is sitting? Who is the management there at Mangau? And maybe you must also do that. So that we must know what is the setup in both. Yeah, but over to you for responses. We can start with you.
In terms of penalties, we had one penalty that was for the escaping on the 1st of January 2002. That are four penalties that gone. I can't remember the exact number, but it should be around about 10 people that haven't received meals or have received meals late. I was 10 minutes late in 7 years that we have done for this job. So there may be around about 10 of those. I don't have the exact thing, but it's not a lot. In other words, they got their food but after 15 minutes and a couple of 10 minutes. In terms of the inmates, the phone calls, perhaps I can explain that better. What we have is when an inmate submits, we take the cash from him so that he doesn't carry cash while he's inside the prison. That, of course, stops a lot of corrupt activities that may or may not have happened. Then that funds are put into a trust account, and then on a computer race, he then transfer that money, whether to the shop, that he can buy a cigarette or whether to the inmate phone system. If he then wants to phone, he uses that money that has been allocated, whether he gets that legitimately, whether his family has paid it in, where that money comes from, can be a lot of sources. He cannot phone everybody. What he needs to give us is he gives us a list of 10 people that he wants to phone. We then phone those individuals and say, "Mr. Bloom, this inmate wants to talk to you. Do you want to talk to him?" Because Mr. Bloom may be a victim that he wants to victimize her. As soon as, this example, Mr. Bloom then gives permission, we authorize that. So you cannot phone anybody as he was a listener to two or three groups, we phone those people beforehand. So we have a cashless society, and he cannot phone everybody, but he can phone Mr. Bloom 10 times a day. If he's programmed, so he has an hour and he wants to spend it talking to his friend Mr. Bloom, then it's his job to do so. In terms of our officials, we recruit our officials basically from the street. The whole company is not even 20 people that has really deep government background. So we recruit them, we train them ourselves to our standards. Then that goes to the Department of Correctional Services. They then authorize or certify the individual so that he can be a correctional officer. So everybody in terms of training is our own staff that we do.
Can we have a follow up, because I know that this follow up will come. Where is your training facility?
The training facility is at the prison. There is no better place than to train people theory, then go for practical under supervision and stuff like that. That's the model that we use. Our training material was done by ourselves and went through then the technical of RSA.
So you don't have a training college?
We don't have a contract with people on site. They are not allowed to work in the facility except at towards the end of the course and then under supervision. They cannot work alone until they are certified by the Department of Corrections. In terms of recidivism, as you know, our sentences are quite long. We don't have a lot of releases. There's also a requirement in the contract that before they go out to the community for release, we have to transfer them to correctional services, which we do, and therefore we don't have the ability to track them after the release because we don't have that part of the contract. We, however, haven't been informed of anybody being rearrested, but as I say, we have limited amount of information in terms of that. Staff accommodation, we don't provide staff accommodation. Our staffing levels is as such that we have enough people on site, even during the night, to deal with any disturbance or any emergency. So our staff basically live in their own houses in the townships from where we have recruited them. On the reserve that we will get in terms of it. Our officials, currently we have got 3 out of 500, around about 500 staff that we employ. Goes over to government per month, sometimes it goes as high as 5. Professionals, we are losing currently teachers. Fortunately, we have a lot of what we call officers, which you will call wardens, that has teaching qualifications, so it's quite easy to feed back into education because we've got the people that has that qualification. To give you an idea of work shortage within Bloemfontein, we have advertised initially 344 positions. 25,000 people applying. So what we've got is we have teachers, qualified teachers, that basically get awarded jobs because there are other jobs available. So that doesn't hit us, but hits us quite far as well in terms of the nurses, there's a shortage. So that's how contracts I know that we can get people. Psychologists as well as social workers also scarcely occur. We get them, but it takes some recruitment time.
Let me have clarity on that. You are saying that people are being recruited by private sector.
The most people that we have lost, Mr. Bloom, is that social development, part of the social development in the province, have created what they call a security branch within social development. And they have taken most of my intelligence officers, some of my supervisors, for that, because they know that they are well trained. So I lose currently a lot of my normal staff to social development. Then I lose educators to the Department of the Education because, as you know, they have increased salaries among governments. So most of the people that I'm losing towards government, not to private sector.
So they are going for better salaries.
They are going for better
salaries. Especially the educators.
The professional groups are moving for better salaries. In terms of BE, how do we assist them? I think we are doing a lot, but to give you an example, there was a lady, it is a lady that was Bloemfontein of the Year, Bloemfontein of the Year, Black Business Year of the Year last year, a Fulham woman, and we assisted her when we got heard of her. She was having a full small school selling clothes at close to the station. We then employed her to start making the inmates garments. She has grown, we paid her in cash as she delivered. That was subsequently built up. She moved from a smaller place to her house to make clothing. She now has a factory, she's got Smiley's contracts, she's got machinery contracts, she's doing government contracts, and she's working for us. She has a factory.
Is that the one who complained to me?
That's the lady that has complained to me. I can quickly deal with that if you want me to.
No. Just wanted to.
No, I know that. I'll gladly inform you afterwards.
What
I know about. In terms of gender equality, we will see, as Mr. Bloom have mentioned, in terms of the status of managers, we battle to get black women into the management positions. We have a developmental program now. We fast track them. And in terms of the 36% 10% of all promotions available for FEMA because of that program that we are making ready. We of course believe that we will get some of these new contracts we want to emphasize that we need to go on. Medical parole, we don't make that decision. Government doesn't make that decision. There was a question of how many of those. I can get that statistic back to you. I don't have it. My idea is that it comes from in terms of that. That was in terms of the third person, in terms of what if I have the name right. Parole board, there is a parole board at our facility. Basically the same parole board as that services could play. So it's an external parole board that has done for correctional services as well as us. We don't have any authority in terms of it. We give reports to what they call the DCFC case management committee. They make some recommendations to get to the parole board. They sit and they inform us of the decision. Quite a challenging area. The parole board likes or from time to time they decide that this inmate has to do this court. While my savings they say he has to do a basic license and he has to do it now before he can go on parole. That course takes a lot of time to do because you can do short course with no effect or you can do the long course with it. In terms of where we were when we prepared for this person to go to the parole board, my psychologist has sat with him and has done an assessment. My social worker has sat with him and done an assessment. And they decided that the best for this person to enable him to go back into the community is to have safety and sexual offenders for intervention. Now, what we found is that the parole board said, leave that sexual offender, leave what all these professionals are saying. We as a parole board person is saying you need license. We are not in that lane. If we are going to recommend the person, yes, we will do licenses if that is what you want, but we will still say that we believe that he has to do the sexual offender course. And we have scheduled those courses, so that was part of the problem that I said that we have now addressed with the parole board and with the department. The capacity of the center is 298. As you have said, we do not, although initially in the negotiations we have given the government the opportunity to overcrowd, they didn't want it then. Because we have to deliver what is in the contract and the type of inmate we detain is determined by the contract, we cannot change it. So 298 capacity of the prison doesn't go above that, although there were some recommendations to include, please, I will get to that in a short time. The notes of five star, or the speaker will answer that that is not the requirement of the contract. I mean, you have to do health and safety. The contract doesn't say that you have to be accredited or whatever, because that costs money, and as you know, it costs us money, somehow you pay for it. So that was not the requirement, going the extra mile that we have done. The gang strategy, the essence of that is still the same. We have the same type of approach. But I agree totally with you, the inmates change on day to day because they're thinking of it. I've had meetings in the last month again where we have revamped again what we are doing. The strategy still stays the same as I've explained to you, to be on top of the situation, to have the intelligence, to understand why people are joining these gangs. Because only when we understand why that we can put something in place. If you have asked me a while ago, I would say, if he goes to prison, he will become a gang member immediately because I need protection. I feel that the officers can't give that to me. I will get other protection. So we need to understand that as an industry, why people are moving towards gangs. If that is to get protection by one card like me, then the officers should be trained to give that protection for me, then I don't need to go to gang. And that's one example. I mean, there's many reasons why people go to gang. But there's a lot of those that the officers can supply so that people don't need to go. So the fact is, those things change as we move along. To give you another example, in a normal gang society or prison society, you will get that there will be an action, in other words, I will stab Mr. Self because I have drawn blood. Now I'm expecting the waters to rush into it, and I have to show that I'm a man. So I will not cry when they hit me. I will not eat the knife with them before I see my own blood. Before I get promoted in this game. The suddenly private sector comes in, you will not find the bad in my facility. So inmates quickly realize that they can do this decision, perhaps, but that their action will not draw blood from them. So then they create something else. They take an instant, they will pack their bags and then go and hit somebody because they want to show I'm ready to be taken to the single cell or wherever. I'm a man, I can take it. So clearly a clear understanding of what gang is, the culture, and what is behind it, makes us better in managing that. I'm chairing that specific committee within my institution. So that's what perhaps makes us able to manage it, but of course you cannot manage everything, because tonight ISIS is only thinking about them, they think we know how to play chess with me and do that type of stuff. So the gang strategy conceptually the same, but changes as we go along. In the morning you will not allow the 26 to go to the bakery as a group. They will do their thing. So there's a lot of these things. So it's ever changing, I agree with the member. In terms of what Bishop has requested, mainly regarding the price discount, I think that the 3 million round that he's referring, I think that one needs to look at it. And I know that you have received numerous presentations. The 3 million round include the price because you are paying off a building over a certain period. That paying off the building, you do not see that in terms of timberly when that starts to operate, because then you have paid off the building in bulk. All 800 or what volume that you are paying for, you would have paid. So you will only see the 100 and something moving forward. Unfortunately, I cannot give the price to you. I think that you will know that it's sensitive at this point in time. There's an RFQ. When you have that with that transaction advisor that told you from that it's affordable and that value for money is proper, you've done that in a closed session. And that's to protect us from not knowing what we are pricing again. So I think that, yes, you can ask the department for that price, but you can be dealt with the same sensitivity as you have dealt with others. In terms of price discounts, in other words, we are meeting, is that there was a certain spec of service. You said, I want a Toyota Corolla 1600 white with rims. We need to begin to fly with this price. Now, as government, our pressure rises in terms of CPI and CPIS and value of the land that goes haywire, we have exactly the same problem as that. So if the spec doesn't change, the price cannot change because now we get penalized because we can't deliver the spec. So that unfortunately, but I think Mr. Self-Law questions will deal with that, because I think that's the thing. So it's not something that I'm saying I'm taking 4% profit, I will now take 2% profit, because that relies on it. I mean, you see behind this, at this point in time, we've got close to 10, so I'm going to get 10% in case of government. If the electricity goes up to 52%, who's going to pay that other 4%? I have to pay that. So clearly I'm not in the point where I can say, I'll give you a rebate, because as government cannot control the electricity price, and I think they've got slightly more control over that than I do. I cannot control. I cannot control CPI. I'm not the government of the Reserve Bank. So therefore, I don't have control over those things to the same extent that other people will have it. And even as you know, the bank also doesn't have control over those issues. So I don't think that the discount is something that one can consider, but as we have said before, we are willing and able to look at specifications. But government has to take a certain service to us, and that changes, of course, the price. We'll follow through.
I'm giving you 2 minutes to wrap up, because we must give Futama also, and then by quarter to one we must be out here.
Right. Mr. Self, in terms of affordability, I agree with you that that's something that we have looked up. I think you agree by the transaction advisor. In terms of changes in unit cost, I think that a higher rate of occupancy may have changed the cost, and it doesn't come to such a increase, one can look at that, but remember this place is designed for 2928. If you put more people in your sewage truck, it's going to come under pressure, water consumption is going to be different. So changing specifications and numbers may be an option, but there will be a fluctuation in prices. It will not be a direct result of that. whether there's use that is made on the facilities, I think that's open discussion. We are not in discussion with the department at this point in time. We do have such an approach. Again, the service currently expects safety interest for this type of thing. If we change to juvenile, I don't think that the design is totally conducive for juveniles. It's definitely not in line with the ministerial and the minimum standards. So one needs to look at what category will suit best, what can be done, and how can we do that not to increase the price to go. So I think these options. The option lies with the department, the process, and then we can look at that. But as always, we will engage in such discussions. The Indaba is purely to understand what is the needs from the broader room community and where can we assist. If you will say, in such Indaba, I don't have school there, so you know how to focus. The parole board is not part of that endeavor because between us and the community we have a separate forum where we talk to them. And I think I've talked a bit on the gangsters. If there's any further details, please contact. In terms of Mrs. Chele, the 4600 is the number of people that have visited the church. So we still have 298 people, but some of them go twice. Some of them don't go at all, so other guys can go four times. The workforce, as I said, we receive them in the community next door. They are trained in intelligence and risk management. And we are putting part of our structure into community trust. They have a 20% share in BCC. So the community trust advises us and say, listen, there's a orphanage that has some difficulty. And we basically make fruit and veg basically on a monthly basis, depending on what season it is in. The clothing is more than on an annual basis, it depends on what they have available, because these are produce of the inmate train, not as if it's on demand. We also started some gardens at the school so that they can produce their own, not going to ask them to see whether we have those available. You need to ask me a question, but I can quickly respond to it. The three wheels that we have, me and Peter, it's basically three wheels. There's contractual rules and regulations where everybody has to do it. There's 14 and a half hours at a maximum between supper and breakfast. I think not more than 4.5 hours. So we cannot do the one I think you're referring to, that we eat lunch and dinner here it is. We are not allowed to do that thing. So what we do is we really give the three meals straight out of the day in accordance with the regulations, and we can prove that. Works, but again, remember, our places are unlocked for 12 hours a day. We don't have the early lockup, so it's possible for us. But my staff is there until 7:30, it doesn't take longer. So we can do it, and we have proof. We also have the 7 days established. People move it from day one, and it works. But the fact that the government is in the transition may be difficult, and I understand it.
Thanks, Mr. Fender. Mr. Jordan?
Thank you,
sir. You have 15 minutes, Mr. Jordan.
I would like to be
the last of us, yeah.
How many penalties? I haven't got any penalties so far, but the government did deduct some payment because of late meals, sir. At one location. The officials, do we train them ourselves? Yes, we do train them. We've got inside, this is Bloemfontein, but we also outsource. We hire a college and we use the college if we need facilities for one.
For training.
Where's
the college?
It's a local, it's a old college in Makadu, just outside town. Recidivism, to keep it short, there are no real steps available, and our prisoners go back the same as in Bloemfontein, if you think it's just that. Do we provide accommodation for staff? No, ma'am, we don't. Staff turnover is about 3 to 4 a month. About half is social workers. And I must say, we didn't lose a single nurse in our hospital. What is she? No, one or two in 6 years, but
not a lot of nursing. Nursing encounters, apologies for that explanation which was not clear. The 35,000 nursing encounters experiment seen by primary healthcare nurses in three clinics. We've got three primary healthcare clinics inside a prison. So let's say on one specific day there's 500 to one or 200 to the other one. That's where the number comes from. Again, apologies for that explanation, it was not clear. Do we assist small companies? We do not only assist small companies, we also assist bigger companies because empowerment's got four targets. The one is who's this contractor, who's the entity going in business with government. There's a 50% ownership there. And we do assist them to get to that point. Subcontractors, yes, we do assist them. We go into formal agreements, strategic support agreements, where we provide the management skills or whatever they need to do that specific job. Even on the lowest levels, we do that. In terms of the reflection you see here, is that the reflection you see in the prison? Definitely not. By contrast, I've got 90% black managers. That's by contrast. And it's being achieved. On the question
managers on the ground.
That's right.
Top structure.
The prison director is Mr. Sivati. Then he's got only one deputy. The level below him is, I think, only one white guy. The all black. The ladies is in charge of the programs, maintenance, the kitchen, the laundry. We've got unit managers with ladies, so they've got their aspects through the
facility. Yeah, you will provide us with us. Yeah.
Medical parole, as was indicated by the defector, is being dealt with by the DCH. Yes, there's a reluctance of DCH to release them because there is a risk involved. The life expectancy can't be guaranteed, as we all know. It's a slight dilemma, but it is low, it can be higher, I think. In terms of, is it a strict regime? Yes, it is a strict regime. We are down to have a contractual structure change. We do that, and that's the routine of the prison. Are they prisoners, do they get better treatment than in school? It's difficult to say. It's always a sensitive issue. We provide as per contract. A big difference of opinions, but luckily we are on the front end of new potential projects where the client, the details can specify according to the needs they've got. In terms of the capacity of the prison and the parole board, yes, we also have a parole board at the Tama. The 3,024, that's for prisoners inside the prison and the full capacity. That's the capacity of our prison in 2024. The reference to employed offenders. We simulate the outside world. If there is a position, a work opportunity, it's been advertised on the notice board. Let's say we need barbershop people. They will then apply for that. And they will be employed there. Do we pay them a salary? No, we don't. Do they get gratuity? Yes, they do get gratuity. That's in line with the DJ, but it's not paid for work done. It's gratuity and incentive for good cooperation. In terms of the 550 employers, is that enough? There was another reference to ratio. I think for the committee it's extremely important to understand we haven't got the luxury to work just on ratios. We work on what needs to be done. A person needs to have 10 jobs, he needs to be occupied for 7 or 8 hours because I need to pay that man and he needs to work. It's a big issue in the government to get ratios right. We don't work on that person. It's a fundamental difference. the NOSA, as Mr. Fenton has indicated, is on top of the contract. We are in line with the Occupational Health and Safety Act. And very important again, we've got a dedicated health and safety officer, a full-time person we employ. On top of that, we've got a full-time dedicated quality assurance officer. As I tried to indicate before, one of the secrets is to do preventative work, to prevent accidents, to prevent maintenance. Therefore, we've got dedicated people doing that work. Death in custody, that number is 100% related to natural causes. It's all people with a specific, illness. And it's just to focus there because we know it's a sensitive issue and we assist the inspecting judge office to keep a hand on that number. In terms of the 150,000, we did not receive the money from government. It's a charity gold day. It's being sponsored by the people in the community. They enroll, we don't pay for them, we invite them, but they still need to pay, and we give all that income to the charity, different institutions. In terms of, can we give discounts, the 25-year contract, Mr. Victor will say a lot. I need to put three issues to the committee. One is risk transfer, value for money, and affordability. Now you are looking to a broad PPP. The broader the PPP, the more benefit government can get out of this. If it provides value for money, and of course, yes, if government can afford it. There is professionalists or professional people who did brief the committee. We are aware of that. Did we offer savings to the government in the past? Yes, we did. We recently also provide possible options for future cost savings. Is there a possibility to increase prices and decrease prices? Yes, there is. In the contract, it's been specified. Everybody talks about the CPI increases, and only CPI. It's not the labor increases. That's exposed to us. The labor cost outruns CPI by far. That risk is in our fault. The saving side, to give you a very good example, which is also a topic of debate, you remember there's a lot of people going to the courts up and down. They put technology in now that they can do that inside and they don't have to transport that prisoner. They call it a security cost saving. If we can do something like that, the discount will go back to the government. But you can ask Mr. Marco, he's a lawyer, he can explain the different mechanisms better than me. On the next...
Sir, one honorable member did make mention of the discounting issue. I think, in fairness, ultimately you're going to get a lack of impartiality from us from the private sector with regard to that. And it's often governance tools to be looking around mechanisms in terms of cost saving themselves. And unfortunately, one of the major things to juxtapose is whether it is cheaper to go in the private sector, the triple P route, or to actually emancipate services as a government yourself. So there is that issue to juxtapose that I think should be keep on those quite aware.
Okay, if I can continue, the question on is the best personnel in our facility to receive the plan and how we discussion with DCH. Mr. Fenton has indicated his staff are also not involved in any discussion. In terms of the very specific question on how often do we donate and who determine that, we donate sporadic and we've got either vegetables available. There are some instances where we plan to do that, bursaries we plan. There's some issues that we plan, like the charity golf that we plan. Who determines? We are blessed to have Mr. Shabazi in the community. We make use of the local chiefs and the structures in the area. We see that the principals, we physically go and visit them. strength assets may sell. We don't give them physical money. We assist them till the point where they've got the item in hand they need. For instance, computers. We will give the computers, we will set it up, we will see that it works, and then we will walk away. But just to make the committee aware that we are not super people, we do make certain mistakes. We just donate computers to a blind school, and then they come on crying to the prison back instead of thanking us. He said, "Why do you cry? You are supposed to be happy." She said, "But we can't see the computer, so you forget to give us a program that can talk to us." So then we discovered we short 50,000 rand to buy that program. So sometimes you make silly mistakes and you try to do it. The doctors, are they there every day? Yes, ma'am, they also are there on weekends, they come and visit. 3 meals is definitely not on paper. It's a big effort, but it can be done. I think that was the last question, and I think my time is over there.
That's fine.
Sorry, it's a lot of comments, sir.
Yeah, okay.
The Honourable Member of Mayor Craig asked a question around women empowerment. What are the empowerment entities that get scared right across the SAC structure that was described to you in the earlier slide? Has the entire group involved in that? Which is an empowerment group that was set up by women, in fact. In fact, a lot of our citizens in terms of cascading empowerment have women constructors and projects. At our inaugural launch, the late Honourable Minister, launched it with great praise singing for the amount of effort and work done by women in empowerment about this important issue.
Let me ask this follow-up, and I'm going to give the members again a chance, but we must also take into consideration the time. Quarter to one, we must be out here, members, and it's you who can assist and help. This issue of the successors, both Kutama and Malom, you are having this workshop. Very good program. You are saying that you can't tell us on re-offending. How will we know that your both prisons are successful in rehabilitation? That's the one. Because you see, if people are going out, we don't want people to come back again. Now you are having this very good programs and very good presence with this very good presentation. We want to hear that. Mr. Mabu, you are saying compliance. That's compliance. What happened with the strike where Mr. Shivazi was still in correctional services in Limpopo, where the Department of Correctional Services had to intervene in helping Kutam. Was there any penalty there? Right. You are aware of the dark room in Mangaung? The dark cell in Mangaung? Are you aware of that? Are you aware of that? The dark cell in Mangaung?
Broadway.
Yeah.
Question.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Are you aware? Yes. That correctional services.
About the
that?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to give over to Mr. Cindy.
Okay.
Sure.
Their contractual obligation
not considered true. In what way their contractual obligation ensure that their company comply with the state government minimum priority on collection on a continuing activities until the end of their 25-year contract, so that we are not in 2008 yet, that this will increase. They signed the contract in 2001, so then 2001. And the sentiment there hope of community in Ghana, and where they display their focus to the community. I just want to know the response of people, particularly the victims of crime, when they explain their focus to them.
And thanks to Nguyen and Bishop Tolu.
Yes, thank you, Secretary. My follow-up question is something to be on the union with women, children in prison. Both women have certain things in the treatment. I don't see anything to tire in terms of the children. But do they have women that are in their terms with the children if they do?
Thanks, Bishop.
Thank you very much, Chairman. So, Chairman, my question to this is that I just want to know, Chairman, because the levels are categorized for all people that are mistaken. And that's so. Which category do you use for those that are important? Why am I? The department of financial service, they are just using qualified system only. But, you know, my concern, if you can go to the whole world in the hospital, you require a different system. But in the financial service, they are just one system to follow. That could be very scary. I just want to in your sentence to the panel, how do you want also the same thing or what? If you are, if you want the same thing, where the credit company comes from, the United States or England, also they are using the same thing, only the qualifiedness or the main group.
Thanks, Bishop. In Tatamawa, you will be the last, and then.
In some presentations by the department, we are told that you are losing some of your staff members. Is that true?
Thank you, Dr. Mann. Are you finished, Mr. Mann?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I just want to give a very good question. Furthering on that question, you talk of a training facility or facility in your center, and then you go on by saying that after training those recruiters, you then send them to the Department of Certification. Why are you doing that?
Thanks. Question
one. In the Chairperson. Devon Westville is in KwaZulu-Natal, and as a result of the carelessness of the officials over there, my department is being taken to court for 1.2 million rand.
Is it your department? Is it your department, or are you doing oversight over the department?
Whatever it is. It's being taken to court for 1.2 million rand. Just because the officials took a young man and took him to a medium B section with elderly, rotten people who raped him, unfortunately, continuously. Aren't you doing that in your sentence?
Thanks. Over to you. And I'm going to be strict with time, honestly, because quarter two, we must be out here. We must be out. I mean, this is not Parliament. We have booked this place, and we can't sit longer than that. You are also having contract, and if you are getting one inmate more, then you know that you can't take it. So, I'm going to stop at 12:45 and we must be out here.
In terms of the realization question, Mr. Bloom, because we have to transfer these images to DCS before 6 months before the end of the sentence, we do not track them. I do not think that correctional services track them sufficiently to give you that statistic, whether they are successful. What we can say is that nobody has returned. We can say that they come to us without being able to read, without any skill, and they go.
But they can't return because you are having people with long sentences. So if this person re-offends, he's going to start at 2 years or 3 years. You will never know that this person is back in prison.
I think that is hard to do, sir, because what we have come in terms of statistics is that people that now 90% of them have seen things longer than 10 years. But if we look at the previous offense, only 60% have it. So statistics indicate that people coming back to prison usually get longer sentences. And because they have previous convictions, they are qualifying at maximum much easier. Because that's one of the criteria how you get a maximum. You cannot come go out of a prison being a maximum, having a sentence, then do something fairly large, and then come back and be even minimum. But their classification system doesn't work.
So we can debate that thing. We can debate that thing. Yeah.
So the short answer is we can't say that the rehabilitation has taken. In terms of HIV measures, we consent for testing. So we do the testing, we give condoms to consenting adults. If there was what they call sexual intercourse without permission, then we give ARVs to both the perpetrators and the victim, and we supply their ARVs in terms of the high security. We set up in such a way that it doesn't violate the rights of privacy. But if you go into a certain area, you're going to be searched. Not body cavity searched, but a fat down search. So be security comes first. But that doesn't violate their rights. In terms of how do we comply with contractual obligations, we have a contract, we have to deliver certain things. We are looking at the white paper, we have to give the department a plan on how do we conform to it. The department can at any time say the policies in DCS have changed. Please test your policies. Can do it our way. So there's a process in place that the department can ask that. So we can move in tandem with them. We can change the contract as we move along as well if there's questions or problems. Although we have invited a lot of victim groups to the Indaba, they haven't attended as yet, so I cannot say to you what their reaction will be because they didn't come. Women and children, as I said in our presentation, only adult males are there. So no female. At this point in time, in terms of Bishop, I will come back to you in terms of the grading. I have subcontracted that service. I know that they are qualified and aged, but what level, I do not know. I will come back to the committee with that other document. Contractually, we have to give primary health care. There are certain qualifications within the contract, but I will allude to that later. In terms of the losing staff members, we, your partners can respond, but from my side, I've in the last year only employed one psychologist from DCS. They have taken, I think, one of mine as well. She stayed for a month and then she moved on to social development. So, not really a lot of movement between the two. It's strange, there's no movement between the segments. We don't easily get some of their staff applying to positions. Then we have advertised the director's position, our prison director is going to convention. The first round we have a lot of DCS officials asking for information. In terms of the process we have followed and the assessment, unfortunately none of them made it. So again, that. We are not sending our recruits to DCS. What we do is we have an approved curriculum that we have to follow, which the DCS have approved. And then at the end of their training, we basically provide documentary proof that they have followed the program as they wanted to us. But the recruit says that our paperwork flowing. They said that they have to do this courses. We say they have years to prove. They say fine, they said it's fine. In terms of the claims, in terms of the rape, yes, it may take you to court from time to time. we as a assessment center, as I've tried to explain, it basically gives us an indication whether this person is vulnerable, whether he's a bully, those type of things. So our system basically deals with the placement in the cell. So there cannot be intentional placement of a person in a cell that is not adequate. If a person asks to be moved from one cell to another, we looked at that with suspicion. Because sometimes there's reasons behind it that can promote gang activity. We have now gone so far that everybody below the age of 25, between 21 and 25, that group of vulnerability is now in two sections. We can't get as combined. Over to you.
Thank you. Jim, I will try to be quick. In terms of the question the chairperson asked, or the person that asked that question, I can just add, I think it's always an opportunity maybe for research, although the turnover to call it such in our prison is limited. The question addressed to Mr. Mark in terms of the incident in Japan in 2006 is very specific in terms of what happened to the contractor. The government did deduct a huge amount of revenue, which is millions. And also the transport of prisoners was addressed by in terms of the question of
you are sure what you are telling us now?
Yes, I'm very sure.
You are sure what you are telling us?
Yes.
The department, you have paid a penalty.
No, I said that the department deduct revenue, income, money from us.
That's a penalty.
Yes.
That's a penalty.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's like the crime.
It's not, can I come in? It's not a penalty in terms of the contract. In terms of the contract, if you don't do a certain thing, you get penalized. 20,000 or 300,000 for escape, whatever. You pay that. If you don't have bed space available, then it's that money. So you can regard it as a penalty because we don't get the money, but it's not a penalty, it's a deduction of service.
Did they pay the penalty of that?
Yes. Normally when the process works like this, if we issue a penalty, if we successfully issue a penalty against them, we deduct that money from their monthly fee. So that is how the system, it's not like they will pay us a certain amount of money. We immediately deduct that amount of money. And this, and in this specific case, that was done, and it wasn't only what they paid for net for bed spaces, for unavailable bed spaces. They also paid for related costs like transport, S&T, that they paid. That I can confirm before the committee that they did pay. And we did that by reducing the amount, because that also reduces the risk of having to claim the money from them. We simply, instead of claiming or sending them this issue, a credit to us, and we simply claim the money. Reduce the money from their monthly fee. That's how it works.
No, thank you very much.
Okay.
I just want to confirm, because during that time I was still the regional commissioner responsible for Kutamata Police. I was involved in
Oh, we will. I hear what you are saying. We will ask the department.
Yes.
For confirmation.
In terms of the HIV/AIDS issue, we've got that education, we've got the same programs in terms of corners, we've got a voluntary testing and counseling program, they are very active in that regard. In terms of the security measures that how do we prevent that we don't interfere with human rights, just to give you an example, we import a very highly developed chair with a your face area for any metal object, you sit on that instead of all that investigation and all that. So there are ways and means that we do that. We pass that on to the DCAs for their practice. In terms of the women, we don't have women, it's a male census as the same as Dufresne says. A very interesting question on the nurse. We only use chief and senior professional nurse. In addition to that, half of them do qualify fully for primary health care. And we also align ourselves with the occupational specific dispensation with the nurses. very important area for us. In terms of the DJs, why do they certify staff? There are two categories. The DJs certify staff to check that the age, the criminal record, is as specified in the contract. In some cases, they do not only certify the staff, they approve the appointment. So the DJs is exactly 100% informed who is working for us, because they can either certify that person or they can approve it. So we are in a complete PPP joint venture in terms of even the appointment of staff.
There's no fronting, sir. There's no fronting.
No,
because 2 weeks ago we had a briefing from the Special Investigating Unit that there's fronting when it comes to tenders and contracts and what. Your prison is clean.
I
and Mangaung is clean. There's no fronting.
In terms of claims, luckily we don't have claims, but the risks are always there. Do we try to separate prisoners? Yes, we do. For management purposes, human rights issues, it just makes sense to keep certain groups together, as we know. I think that was the question that I think I discovered.
In terms of funding, if I can just say, the controller basically, that's the DCA stock. If we employ a electric power company to manufacture or supply, they have to approve it, and they have to check specifically the funding. And then every year, the supervisory committee brings out a report in which they say whether they can be or not. Up to now, no
problem. Can I also respond to one question that was asked by Mrs. Cindy and
Chipunga?
Chipunga,
yeah.
About how, whether the contractor can keep abreast of development. And the contract makes provision for that, for a review of the policies and the procedures of the contractor. It's not like it's cast in stone. So whenever there are new developments, it can be the Department of Health or wherever, will make sure that the contractor is aware of. But most of the time, they use their own initiative to make sure that they are abreast of development in the country. So there's no way in which they can lag behind, because whenever there are developments within our own policies and procedures, we'll make sure that we inform them about those developments, and we look into the contract to see whether maybe the contract is in line with the present policy.
Thanks, Mr. Marco. Any one of you wants to say the last word? What is the question? Repeat it again.
My question was, in recent months there were reports from the Indian Chancellor. If they have good police to bring, I wanted to know if that's true or not, because they say they are not producing funds from India.
So you will come back with that answer. you can't answer. We will follow up that. We will follow it up.
No, I'm not aware of that.
That's why I'm saying. Yeah. No, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You see, I want to follow up on what Mr. Self's question. On using these two facilities for juvenile, for youth. And you can recall that was initially our agenda for today. But then we decided to have this type of discussion. But as a portfolio committee, we feel very strong that these facilities can better be used for juvenile youth, because the facilities, the workshops that you are having, correctional services is not in a position to do exactly that. You can't have a person, I see that in both slides, yes. You have people of 60 years, 70 years, and it's a waste of taxpayers' money to learn this person to read and write, let him do candles, good work, and whatever. But if we can teach this juvenile in these facilities, then I am very sure, and this committee feels that it will be value for money. But Mr. Fenter is saying that this prison is not, the centers were not constructed for this type of thing. But according to us, and we will engage the Department of Correctional Services, because we are the lawmakers. If we are saying that these facilities must be used for the training of and incarceration of youth, then it must be like that. Because we can't see any sense in using these facilities for this. I see motor mechanics, both of you are having programs of motor mechanics and electrician and what. We are sitting with youth 30 years of age, 25 years of age, who is doing long sentences. If this person comes out of prison, then we know that at least he's having a skill. He can even apply to correctional services, where correctional services can use that skill of electricity, of you have said that what is it, catering, the hospitality, and all that. So that is what we. But we will engage the Department of Correctional Services. It's them who have signed the contract with you. So that we must tell them that this is what we feel must happen to them. But thank you very much for the presentation, Mr. Fenter and Mr. Yordan, and everybody here, for the openness, frankness that you have presented to us. I know that you are having still a lot. We will come and visit. We will have time now during this recess to come and visit both prison in this space that we must. I see that you have also still one of the members of correctional service. You see that, Mr. Shibati, you are saying that you are not coaching and recruiting. But yes, Mr. Shivasi is sitting here. I know he was a free agent. You know, in sports, people are running after good players, and I don't know who was Carlos Pereira here in this, but he's now with you. But good luck and everything of the best. You must not wait for us alone to have this type of briefing. You must also write to us and say to us, you want to brief the committee on this and this and this. Because we also learn from you. Bishop Tolo raised the issue of that in the pipeline, the department wants to build other triple P's. And this type of information that we are getting here, it's very, very useful for us to engage the department on issues. This 241 prison, the running of it, we are learning a lot and getting a lot from you. It's not time wasting. That we are spending here 2 hours, we have spent now 2 hours, 3 hours here. But it is not, we have started 10, it's now 5 to 1. But thank you very much, members, thank you very much. We will have lunch here. We had a very good Samaritan, Cindy has organized lunch for us here, very good lunch, not a lunch of Parliament. And she has said she wanted to treat us for DCS. Not DCS. These people are very rich. They are having banquets and gala evenings and whatever. They are very rich. So thank you very much for the presentation, and have a safe journey back. But you can go and listen to the debate, the fighting inside there. We have missed SADC fighting. I wanted to be there in the SADC thing, but unfortunately it was. But there's two other debates in the chamber today. Cindy, what is the two debates? You are, I saw you are the whip, the duty whip. What is the debate? You are not sure. All right. I can tell you.
it is local government, the one is local government, and the other one is public service and administration. You see, I'm living within my head. But members and guests, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Enjoy the lunch with us. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. And I want one of these things.